So welcome to The Mystic. I'm Dr. Scott Morris with Church Health, and I'm joined by Rabbi Micah Greenstein, Reverend Joshua Narcissa, and the one and only Kirk Whalum. And we are in the green room of Crosstown Concourse for the next hour of music, discussion, and matters of the Spirit.
So just what is the mystic? It is not Muslim prayers on Friday, Jewish prayers on Saturday, or Christian prayers on Sunday. The mystic is a catalyst through music, dialogue, silence, and story. We hope to strengthen every listener's attachment to their hopes and dreams. In the mystic, diversity is a prerequisite for all creativity, which is why this green room at Crosstown Concourse is the perfect home. In the mystic, the world is far better served by the different beliefs than it could ever be if limited by rigid uniformity. And even if this doesn't rock your gypsy soul, the goal of the mystic is not to feel better, but to get better at feeling. So we ask that every listener be filled with the strength to open your heart and treasure the differences that distinguish us. May the music of compassion, kindness, spirit, and insight fill this hour together.
All right, y'all. Well, I have really missed over the last 9 months hearing that song played at End of the Mystic. For the 2 years before all this, it really mattered to me that we would come together once a month in the green room, and now here we are once again. But man, the world has changed. Have y'all noticed that?
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
I'm not the only one who's noticed it's changed.
Well, you haven't gotten any grayer, Scott. You look about the same handsome guy as before. I mean, is there? Yeah, it helps that you started out gray.
I started out gray, and I probably have like no hair left. But
Josh, on the other hand, I think I see a couple of tiny little gray hairs in there.
Oh, there are definitely a few more than when we started.
I mean, Joshua started out and he was only 25, and now he looks like he's
40.
Like one of us, you know? I mean, right?
And we had a baby. It's been 8 months since we got together. Right, exactly. So I guess you're still the baby, Joshua, even if
I'm
you look
still
older.
The baby, still the baby of the bunch, but definitely have been aged in terms of wisdom and experience when it comes to exploring, I mean, really just journeying through this pandemic. I think one thing that I have learned is that we truly need one another, not in the cliche or the bumper sticker kind of way, but we need one another. We are not expendable. We are not disposable. And we cannot do this by ourselves.
I mean, Joshua, that's really what I think we need to talk about today, which is, you know, 8 months for me personally, the impact it's had on my spirit has been intense. I mean, I still feel like I'm strong, I'm happy, but, you know, there's an element I'm not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, would y'all agree? I mean, are y'all the same person?
Of the three of us, I think, of four of us, I think I'm the only one who is qualitatively itinerant, you know? So in terms of that aspect of what what the pandemic has meant in terms of life changes and course redirections and, you know, GPS just turning off and going, okay, let me start over. You know, your GPS that sometimes goes, wait a minute, let me reroute you. I think I'm the one with the most bruises.
And Kirk, it used to be impossible to find a time to do the Mystic because you were always on the road. No telling where you might be. And now I know exactly where you are. You're just like three blocks away.
My wife knows that if I'm not in there or in the bedroom or in the bathroom, I'm across the backyard in my studio, period. Those are the three places I basically hang out. So you're right. It's been quite a change for me. Mm-hmm. But again, I think, you know, plugging me into the overall disaster that this has been for the world. I mean, I just don't feel like even mentioning me, you know. Mm-hmm. My challenges are minimal compared to what so many people have dealt with, losing loved ones, you know.
That's mm-hmm. all true, but I mean, Kirk, your career has, you know, you're a touring musician who now hasn't been able to tour. I mean, it's had to impact you spiritually.
Well, it has, you know, and just to say that, you know, if we talk about, for instance, the impact it's had on the country and on the globe, on the world, you know, we can talk about the economic impact, right? It is a real thing, which has obviously very real implications in our lives, spiritually and otherwise. And so I have my economic story to tell, you know, that 80% of my income, you know, went away. But you know, it just doesn't. If there's anything, Joshua, to your point, you know, if there's anything that we can say that has drastically changed, I think it has more to do with the way we see ourselves. Yeah. We talk about we study Richard Rohr together, Scott and I, and Joshua, and we talk about, you know, the two halves of life, you know, in his classic Falling Upward, and you feel as if, man, you're forced into a situation to reanalyze, reassess who you are, you know, because it's so hard to divorce what you do from who you are. And but for me, that has just very concrete implications, you know, because, you know, I'm out here and I'm kind of a celebrity in a microcosm, and it's because I'm out here doing something. But right now, I'm not out here doing that, so it's put me in a much clearer space in terms of who I am.
One thing I got from you, Kirk, from our exchanges, and whether you're younger as you are, Joshua, or a physician, rabbi, or a musician, and I forget who said this, but since this is a radio show, stop living this life like it's a dress rehearsal. This is the show. I think this pandemic has reminded us that there's only one performance and you don't have time to hesitate when it comes to pursuing your dreams. Stop procrastinating, right? Stop thinking that there is time later to do the thing you want to do or become who you want to be. I think that has been one of the lessons learned individually about this.
So Micah, as the pastor of a very large congregation, I mean, how has that impacted the people that you care for, but also for you being their pastor? I mean, how have you made it through 8 months, and where would you say this has changed both you, but also your congregation?
Well, here we are in November, and mental health is taking its toll. I think there was the initial, we're all in this together, we're going to get through this, and then it's November. People are sad, they're scared, they're upset. I run out of psychologists and psychiatrists who I trust to refer to. So it gets back to what we always talk about. When you don't think you can hang in there, you know, tie a knot and hold on and reach out. I'm sure there are people listening who realize this idea that there are moments that we all aren't certain. But I do believe if we can get through the next 4 months, I really believe that it is going to be all right. And that's fundamentally what Faith in the Mystic is about. It seems to me that somehow, some way, it is going to be all right. And if we made it to 8 months, I really think we've only got four more this month, November through February. And then I think we're going to find a way to get back. You've assured me that, doctor, right?
I'm wearing my doctor hat. I'm not sure if 4 months is enough, Micah.
I don't mean normal. Do you think we'll be moving towards the vaccine?
I mean, maybe, maybe not. I don't know if 4 months, maybe.
All right. Then we have to hold on even more.
Yeah. Mm. So Joshua, as one of the pastors of Mississippi Boulevard, the Boulevard hasn't actually had in-person worship in 8 months, right?
No, have not. Haven't had worship since, I believe it was March 15th.
Same. We stopped as you did.
Kind of shut it down.
No initial plan, no plans for January either, right?
No, not at this time. Probably for the foreseeable future, moving toward continuing with our virtual worship and just kind of seeing how it goes and trying to lean on our lay membership, those who are in the medical workforce, to also give us what data they're hearing to make the best decisions for our congregation. We are a predominantly African-American congregation. We know that this is disproportionately impacting Black and brown folks. And so as much as we might want to gather together in a sanctuary, it just doesn't make practical sense for us because of the outsized impact that it would have on our membership. And so it's been hard. So as I'm on staff there, I'm the, you guys, Church Health and the Boulevard share me. But one of the greatest things I get to do each week is called Time to Talk to God. We've used to be just prayer before service. Folks would come down to the altar and pray. Now it's virtual. It's over Zoom and GoToMeeting. And week in and week out, there's a faithful group of older church ladies who trust me enough to let me pray with them. Hmm. And that has become worship for me. I will go on record in saying the first few months where it was just going on Facebook and even interacting with folks, that was hard. But the week in and week out joy is that I get to go on my computer and see the faces of, I don't want to call names and get in trouble, but these church ladies who trust me with their prayer requests and their prayer concerns and their joys. And we get to, these past 8 months, walk life together with, I think most of you know, like I lost my father at the beginning of this. And so them holding me up and then to hear about their relatives who have transitioned or who are in the hospital with COVID or an issue with a niece or a spouse, being able to still walk life together with folks, even through this pandemic, back to what I said, like we need one another, and that's not going to change.
So Joshua, I mean, you are still a young pastor. So do you think that would have happened for them to accept that you like that as a, you know, a young preacher in your 20s?
Well, I think the pandemic accelerated it.
Yeah.
Right. I was already there for about a year or so, or going on a year when the pandemic started. And the pandemic just helped them to see that I'm someone that's around, that I can be relied upon, and for me to also have that trust with them and to step into that role. So yeah. Definitely.
Right. So, you know.
What about you, Scott? I mean, what have you learned about nurturing your spirit individually?
Yeah, for me, purposely, you know, Church Health's been open every day, you know, from March, and it's been intense in terms of taking care of our patients. Mm-hmm. You know, 100,000 people lost their job, which meant they lost their health insurance, which is like, where are they going to go to the doctor now? So that has been a very intense thing for Church Health, and as the CEO of Church Health, for me. And so I feel stressed, and I can't say I've ever really felt like I was stressed in the work I do. I mean, part of it, there's never been a way to just go take a vacation. You know, I haven't, you know, left in any significant way Memphis since March, and that's a long time to just go to work day after day after day in a very stressful thing. So, so that's part of why I was so eager for us to get back to the Mystic, because the Mystic for me has been something that truly fed my soul. And one of those things is hearing Kirk Whalum play his saxophone. So, Kirk, you're on.
Que j'ai eu beaucoup de chance, quelque chose manquait à ma vie. L'éclat de l'or éblouissait mes yeux en regard de toi, a changé tout ça. Que la terre s'arrête de tourner, le soleil s'arrête de briller, qu'ils me disent que ça ne vaut pas la peine, que tout s'effrite et se déchire. Je sais déjà au fond de moi que mon plus beau rêve s'est réalisé. Parce que dans cette vie tu m'as aimé. All I've been blessed with in this life, there was an emptiness in me. I was imprisoned by the power of gold. With one honest touch, you set me free. Let the world stop turning. Let the sun stop burning. Let them tell me love's not worth going through. if it all falls apart, I will know deep in my heart the only dream that mattered had come true. In this life, I was loved by you. I know that I won't live forever, but forever I'll be loving you.
That was Claude Hines on the piano.
Thank you, Claude. Shall I have, I've said many times that Kurt Whalum can touch my soul faster than anybody else. And
well said.
And yeah. You did it one more time, Kurt.
Whew. Well, I made it without crying.
Yeah.
I get a point for that.
See, it's been terrible to deal with the virus, knowing how it has upset our life. I mean, I'm bemoaning the fact that I can't travel, when the reality is that, I mean, I think all of us now have people in our lives that it's touched. I mean, yeah. I mean, Joshua, you lost your dad. So have you come through that?
Well, with lots of tears and a lot of folks holding me up. So the interesting story is, him and I had a very fraught relationship, and something had been nagging me to get in contact with him and hadn't done it. And I remember my friend saying, look, you need to do it. I found out on Facebook, actually, that he was on a ventilator. That's how I found out, and said, you know what, it's time for me to reach out. And I said, let me just get through our book discussion, actually, and said, let me just get through that, and then I'll finally contact him. Got through that, did some more work, and reached out to my half-brother to say, well, you know, can you take a call? And got word that he had passed. And that is when it really began to click about how what is truly important, right? One thing that this pandemic, I hope, has given us all is a bit of perspective to understand what is important, what really matters, to go on and say those things that need to be said. And to not waste our time with just gap fillers. I think that's what I got out of that entire experience. But I literally could not have done it without the love and the care of folks at the Boulevard, my fiance, my mom, my sisters, quite literally held me up.
And your experience is echoed by all those dying people, infected people, yeah. Sick people, having a wave.
Yeah.
Or say goodbye through a phone. But you said something before in passing as a white rabbi. I just got to say that one of the things I've learned these past 8 months is that societies that don't grapple with their complicity don't have the antibodies to prevent injustice.
Just said something.
And, you know, what I've learned from these past 8 months is what it means to care and not to care about people dying, about minorities not mattering, about children traumatized as a societal policy. Mm-hmm. And this week we had the election. It's going to take a while to fix what's broken. And I just hope that collectively we've learned that we are all responsible, and some more than others. Mm. But when you mentioned just in passing, yeah. Oh, Mississippi Boulevard, you know, we both suspended services. I got people with diabetes and hypertension. Yeah. But when 47 out of every 100,000 white people are dying, but 98, more than double, Black, and I think the Latino number is not much lower than that.
Different. Yeah.
That's one thing that has just rocked my world even more the last 8 months is our complicity.
You wonder, I mean, it does beg the question, I think, why we sit here in a forum of such that calls into question faith, and where does faith fit into the overall equation that we call life, right? And before, I think maybe, you know, that conversation is a lot more forced because people are like, yeah, whatever, you know. But now as we sit here, we're grappling with that in a new way. You know, thank you to the cosmos or whoever, you know, for that quote-unquote blessing. But you're right, Michael, like, you know, as a country, and again, we just, you know, we unplug this country for a moment just to take a better look at its unique, you know, problems and its unique challenges and complicities, et cetera. And we can't help but wonder, you know, the way things have devolved, beginning with this pandemic, especially in their race relations, in the economy, and again, I say the economy how that economy applies to the weakest and the poorest. Well, are we now faced with a new opportunity to unravel, to peel back the layers that we've heaped upon our initial challenge of race in this country? Do we now have a better chance of getting to that? Is it better or worse? I mean, it's just a question.
Yeah, I mean, we've always had the chance. So it has always been on us to sort of say, okay, we're going to move forward on this. But, you know what, I think none of the four of us are going to question where is God in all of this, which I think some people might say, where is God? But, I mean, no, we're not questioning that. The issue is, what is our response to God in the middle of all this? So I think that's really, to your point, you know, how do we move forward? You know, everybody wants to get back to normal. I mean, Michael's already made the point that this is the world we're in right now. We have to find a way that we rise up and sort of ask the question, what is God asking of me?
Yeah, I mean, God's not going to press a divine reset button, you know, and start life all over again. It's up to us. I mean, the Noah and the rainbow, you know, he just said, I'll only mess this up once, but it's up to you now. I just wonder who the we are, because in this mystic conversation, whether with Sonia or Brother John of blessed memory going back, how many years now? 3 years we've been doing this?
4 years now.
4 years. I don't want to speak for Joshua and Kirk, but you've said in your own way, you understand racism. And I think the pandemic has brought out the we are the people who are not necessarily of color. We can either ignore it, we can rationalize it, or we can become it. And I cry when I see what people are becoming. And I just pray that this wave of God's grace and faith in action and it's up to us washes over more than those who are suffering. It never helps the tormented, you know? these rough times. It just kind of enables the same kind of suffering. So I hope this is a reset. I guess I'm hearing it all differently after the pandemic.
Yeah, that was my point.
And watching, exactly, brother, and seeing what some of our brothers and sisters have become.
We have to ask the question, where do people of faith go forward on this? And you know, how do we help lead that? I mean,
I'm not Christian, but he was Jewish. Didn't Jesus say love one another? I mean, right. Talk is cheap unless you really mean it.
unless you got skin in the game,
exactly.
as he would say. You know, and by the way, I mean, geez, Mark, you know, if I had an hour to unwrap, you know, what you just said, I mean, and who it is who said it, like, the fact you talked about becoming, okay, and you know, and then you talk about reset. Like, as a society, there was a point that Americans decided, Americans being the slaveholding class, whatever, decided to become white. Okay, so you as a Jewish man, you weren't white, you know, like you are, you know, nation of Israel. You are in a setting here where, culturally speaking, there was a thing that wasn't a thing at that time, right? Because you would have been persecuted for being a Jewish person. This person would have been persecuted for being Irish. Okay, and then the other person would have been persecuted for being Polish. But none of y'all were white. None of them. And so when that decision was made, you know, corporately or whatever, writ large, that, okay, you know what, let's just all kind of unify behind this non-existent trope called being white for the purpose of the following, right? So I just want to bring that out and say that, man, you hit it on the head. The reset, one way of looking at it, is that we could go back and question that and say, wait a minute, that's actually not a thing. Can we make that not a thing anymore? And now let's talk about the Africans, Irish, Polish, Israelites, et cetera, who make up this great experiment. How can we reset, as you said, Micah?
I want to add another R reword into that, the remembering. Like the putting of back to the remembering, the reordering of members into a whole, right? The coming back together after this pandemic that I hope we do goes back to the people that will make up that collective. And I think what I'm really trying to get at is that we are called to be with one another. We're called to have that skin in the game, and it's going to cost us something. Right? It costs to walk this journey of ups and downs and deaths and celebrations. It will cost us something, but the cost is worth it if it means that we're able to have reset and remembered and restored the kind of vision and community that I genuinely believe we were all called into at the point of existence.
But I think people really have a desire to be with one another.
Yeah.
I mean, we sort of began by saying that. I mean, we want to be with each other, hopefully in a new way.
Yeah.
You know? Of course, we were born for community, but it's that professor from Columbia, Hartman?
Saidiya Hartman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Who I've been reading, her writings on the afterlife of slavery, the afterlife of slavery, which she lists as limited access to healthcare, limited access to education, premature death, incarceration, impoverishment, the skewed life chance that Black people still face, and the furious desire for freedom that comes with them. And the question that I've been reading in her writings over this pandemic that she returned to again and again is, did slavery really end? But then, oh no, you know, people hear that as reparations and politics and this week's election, but I hope we could come together in a more mature way.
Yeah.
And face reality. All of us. So, yeah. we're born for community. People can't wait to get to be together again. But hopefully, back to your question, Scott, for a holy purpose.
Yeah.
And by the way, isn't that where two things step in? When we run into that gauntlet of, well, we know what we should be doing and we know what we need to do in order to make it, you know, further and to advance and to heal and blah, blah, blah. We know that, but how in the world are we going to do that? Enter faith and music, right? And to, you know, the mystic, things that are intangible, but nonetheless irreplaceable, axiomatic, pick your adjective, you know, things that lubricate this wheel of progress. Like, and not only that, the faith world is where some would say the Hebrew Bible says that, you know, it was spoken into existence by faith, but isn't faith where we get to speak into existence another reality?
Yeah.
So with the music theme, Kirk, lead us on to the next song here.
As I sit and I listen to the conversation that you guys have, all I can think of is love. And no matter where, whether it's COVID, whether it's the tension in the world, wherever it is, it's just love. Self-love, love for one another. And we see that being away from each other, it's that moment, that connectivity, you know, that we get to share with each other and really remember how beautiful we are as a people. Remember how beautiful love is for all of us. And so as me and Kirk do this song, it's old classic, You Are So Beautiful. You are so beautiful to me. You are so beautiful to me. Can't you see? You're everything I hope for. You're everything I need, yeah. You are so beautiful to me. Beautiful to me.
Thank you, Claude.
Joe Cocker has nothing on y'all.
There you go, right. Who was Joe Cocker? I don't hardly remember him. So. Joshua doesn't even know who Joe Cocker is.
So, I don't.
You're right.
I'm not gonna lie.
So for those of y'all joining us for the first time, first, thank you. We're glad you've come to experience the Mystic. But we finish off every time with a devotion. And we also are going to be doing this every first Thursday of the month. So this is our first radio experience on WYXR, your crosstown radio. So we're excited to be a part. So we'll be December what? 3rd? 3rd. We'll be again together on December 3rd. But so Joshua will lead us with the devotion, and then Kirk will close us out one more time. So Joshua.
For today's devotion, I want to lift up the words of Howard Thurman, one of the greatest, in my opinion, mystics of the 20th century. In his well-known book, The Inward Journey, this meditation is entitled Paths We Did Not Know, and it's one that I've read for some of the team here at Church Health, and it's one that's been keeping me, and I think it's a bit of guidance for the resources we ought to be using to make our way through the journey that lies ahead. He leads us on by paths we did not know. There is an abiding desire to know the future, to see around the corners of the days and years. Even when we say we do not concern ourselves about what will happen next month or next year, the shy insistence still remains. We want to know. This normal feeling is a part of all the anxiety which we face on the threshold of any new adventure. If we could be sure that all will be well, if we could have some guarantee that our present hopes would not betray us and leave us deserted in the lonely place, then we would find the peace that belongs to the contented. But life is not like that. The future is never quite a thing apart from all that has gone before. We bring into the present ingredients and cargoes from the past, and these are with us as we take the unknown road. All that we have learned, felt, and thought, all our experience from birth to now, all the love that nourished us at other times, all the yearnings rooted in our spirits, all these things are with us as we move into the unknown way. And then there is the witness of others who have gone along the road we take. True, the road will mean for us something unique, but not altogether unique. The generations meet and share in ways beyond our grasp. The secrets of the new path, the first step, the beginning way. He leads us on by paths we did not know.